Rebag is a luxury resale marketplace. They have a curated collection of investment-worthy bags, watches, and fine jewelry. Each piece is carefully vetted and verified by experts. You can buy and sell finds from the world's top brands, including Hermès, Chanel, and Cartier. Head to Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10. That's Rebag.com to get 10% off your first purchase with code REBAG10.
Betches Media presents.
Donald Trump was a stain on our country.
I'm someone's daughter, too.
That's what I'm saying.
So help me God. Congratulations, Mr. President.
The Betches Sup Podcast.
Mr. Vice President, I'm speaking.
Hello, I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Elise Morales.
I'm Caitlin Berg.
And this is the Betches Up Podcast, where C-SPAN meets the group chat to help you process and laugh at the biggest topics in U.S. news and politics. We just hit record because we are all three double-vaxxed gals.
Woot, woot.
I know, I got my first vax on the Wednesday pod, and I got my second vax on the Wednesday pod. So I am fully inoculated, and very exciting news. And I've had a lot of really nice listeners reach out to me about this, so I did want to give an update. My dad got the go-ahead to get the vaccine as well, and because he has an autoimmune condition, so it was like kind of touch and go as to whether or not he was going to be able to get it. His doctor gave him the go-ahead, and he is half vaxxed as of today, and will be fully vaxxed in time for me to come out and visit him for my birthday.
Oh, you guys have a vaxiversary.
We have a vaxiversary, and I very much appreciated everyone who reached out to me about my dad. That was very sweet.
That is very, very sweet. Yeah, I got my second Pfizer. You got Pfizer. Caitlin said she got Moderna. I got my second Pfizer on Monday and have been waiting for the symptoms to come, and they haven't really. I was fine. Like we were saying before, this is like, I don't know. I think they were so hyped up that I was preparing to just be completely obliterated. And I just felt how I normally feel, which is like not amazing.
Yeah, I felt the same way. I was kind of exhausted after my second Moderna. And I was trying to figure out, is like, am I feeling fatigue or is this just, is this just how I am now? Because like the pandemic kind of like sucked all of the life out of me. And so now I'm just like permanently exhausted, like a crypt keeper in flesh.
It's like, I'm just tired because I went outside yesterday to get the vaccine.
Right. It's like, I'm like, well, you know, I mean, I just got it, so I don't think I have any side effects, but I'm also like, well, I have a stomach ache and I kind of want to take a nap, but that's every day.
That's just being in your 30s.
That's just how it's kind of been ever since I turned 30 years old. So.
Oh my God. Yeah. Pro tip to our Gen Z listeners. If you're wondering what being in your 30s a hangover in your 30s feels like, it feels like the second Pfizer vaccine.
Yes. Yes. And if you're wondering what being in your 30s feels like, it's that you have a stomach ache and kind of want to take a nap.
you literally can't tell the difference between the side effects and just life.
Yeah, that's exactly. Like my bones are aching. Why?
Why are my shoulders so tight? Is it the vaccine?
My joints are cracking. Why?
It's so weird. I have like these wrinkles and this sunspot. I think the vaccine needs to be looked into.
Yeah, the vaccine is making my skin elasticity really weird.
Don't come for us. Obviously it is not, but I feel like it is like 30s and 40s because older people actually, some of them have like a less intense reaction because their immune systems are already like a little bit chilled out and weaker. I was reading that the flu vaccine that they make for older people year to year is actually like would lay us out because they have to make it extra, extra strong to make sure it works for them. But because their immune systems are just like, we're retired too. So they don't freak out.
My parents had like no side effects.
Really?
My parents. Well, my dad, I felt tired for sure because vaccines just kind of lay him out in general. But my mom, nothing.
His immune system was like, oh, here we go.
Yeah. Well, my dad's immune system is ready to respond to like air. Just kind of any, if he gets a little cranky. Like, it's gonna happen,
so. I know. I always say to like my fiance, it's like whenever I just feel weird in the afternoon, like I haven't eaten enough, I'm just like, I'm having an episode. I just feel bad. I have a headache. My body hurts. I'm having an episode. And we act like it's like, I have no just diagnosed disorders. It's just, sometimes we have episodes. good timing for this because tomorrow marks 100 days since Joe Biden's inauguration. The president's going to give a fun address tonight. So we're not going to go too much into, you know, 100 day stuff. We'll do that tomorrow based on what he emphasizes. But notably, it will be the first time in history that two women will sit behind the president while he delivers this type of speech. It is not a State of the Union. It's a State of the Union light. What is the difference between a joint session and a State of the Union, Caitlin? Elise, it looks like you looked it up and you were ready.
I did Google it, but I was like, I Googled it, so I actually know, but I'm sure Caitlin knew before Googling it. So it's, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it's that normally this speech takes place in like February. And so the assumption is that the president is not yet up to date on the state of our union in his first year. And so it's considered like a joint, it's considered like an address to Congress, but it's not the State of the Union because he hasn't been there long enough, supposedly.
Right. It's like they're just talking. They're just in the talking
is
stage.
Is that it, Caitlin, they're not, or am I wrong?
Technically, yeah, it's technically the State of the Union, but not. and it's literally just an election year thing. It only happens after an inauguration, which means that it also is true, I believe, for reelected presidents. Because inauguration is the key aspect. It's like the entire thing is like basically we reset, even though the government hasn't actually reset, like it's still considered a joint session discussion. And you're like, why? And it's like, well, because it's not the State of the Union. The State of the Union can only happen in non-inauguration years. So there's something like that.
Interesting.
Because they're technically, we never talk about it this way when we do have two-term presidents, but it's always two separate administrations for the two separate terms, right?
They're not the same administration. And that's why you get like, there's a huge, usually there's a big amount of turnover between one administration and the next. For example, like almost everybody at the top cabinet levels switched out in the Obama years, right? We had a new Secretary of State. We had like, new housing secretary, like everything changed. Like we flipped a lot of stuff over and most people don't even think about it. But from a government standpoint, yeah, it's kind of like we got a second, a different, like same person, different cast, you know, it's like, it's like, you know,
it's a new season. It's a new season with all new writers.
Yeah. Some people died off.
It's like the second Aunt Viv, you know, like we all experienced.
Definitely Hillary Clinton.
Like, this isn't real. This is not Aunt Viv, but it was. We were supposed to believe this. It was not true.
You just replaced Hillary Clinton with John Kerry, and we're supposed to act like it's the same damn person.
So we will update you all on that tomorrow. Elise is going to be live tweeting it tonight. You guys know I just get excited when we can make memes again because people do not gather. Like, I can just foresee there's going to be so many memes about, like, this is being a woman at work with, like, just two badass women behind a man who's doing a fine job. But, like, come on, we know they both respectively could probably do better.
Yeah, I am. I'm very excited for Kamala's listening faces. I think she's going to have incredible listening faces. A good squint being like, yes, yes, yes. I just feel like she's really made to sit there and do the listening faces.
Totally. Yeah, she definitely was. And I love that they can hide their actual like facial reactions if they want. I assume they will be masked while the speech is going on.
Yeah, I wonder. Well, they are indoors. So they are fully vaccinated. And everyone there should be fully vaccinated.
They're all going to be wearing sneakers.
Except for the Republicans. So everyone wear masks indoors because Republicans are the number one non-vax group in the United States. You'd think, oh, it's a racial demographic or it's like some sort of like identity thing. No, it's literally just a political affiliation. If you're a Republican, you are a threat to public health.
Did you guys see that sort of viral New York Times headline from last week that was basically stating the obvious, which is just that like white men are not getting vaccinated. They're the ones that are not. They just don't feel like it. There are lots of anecdotes going around about the vaccine period. And I just think it's hilarious that we live our lives feeling like shit for a week every month. If you have a uterus, we're getting vaccines. We are suffering through period vaccines and they don't do any of it.
Yeah. It's, I mean, the whole situation is really interesting. I was actually just reading an article that like yesterday that Latinos are one of the most willing groups to be vaccinated, but they're one of the least vaccinated groups because of like access and all of that kind of stuff. So they're actually like, they have higher rates of willingness to be vaccinated, but like the vaccines aren't getting to them. And they're actually disproportionately lower like rates of getting the vaccines in Latinx communities, even though by and large, most of them are like, yeah, give me the jab.
That's definitely a messaging error. It seems like the information is not getting to them in a way that that's what easiest.
The article was saying.
Oh,
basically.
Really? Yeah. At Javits, I saw like pretty good setups of like, it was very easy to ask if you needed somebody to speak a different language. They have, I mean, obviously living in New York City, I guess is a little bit different. The one thing I did want to talk about with the 100 days to sort of keep in our minds as we're watching tonight and watching the reaction, because Caitlin, I've been thinking about you as I've been reading about this in the past, just throughout the past week, which is that like, everyone's like Joe Biden. And Elise and I were talking about this and I agree, but it's like Joe Biden's had a pretty amazing 100 days. He's gotten a lot done. He's been allowed to get a lot done. And it's been framed almost like this is like what we wish Obama had been like, without considering that like Obama's the reason we got Trump. Like, would we have even let this black man do all of this in 3 months? Is that something we should keep in mind as we're looking at this response?
Oh, man. I mean, there's a lot here. I have a lot to unpack about like Joe Biden writing on his own identity as like white guy who's not gonna make any trouble. The entire thing, right? And like the reason he got elected is because he's Obama's VP. So like we're all sitting here being like, Joe Biden, like, wow, look at all the stuff he's able to do. And it's like the only reason he's here is to fix the problem. Like we all were, I was literally just saying this to my parents and they were completely agreeing, even though they were, my mom has like a Biden Harris bag and she was like excited.
Relatively.
And we all, like, I was thinking and talking to them and being like, you guys know that no one goes hard for Joe Biden. Like no one's actually like, I would have destroyed anybody for Joe Biden. If even without Trump, if there had been no Trump, I would have been like stamping down the door for Joe Biden. I was like, no one does that. Even Jill, I remember like back in like 2019 when they started and she said this thing about like, you know, you just have to accept, like, you just accept him.
Right. She was like, nobody's perfect. But look at your alternatives.
Going hard for him. Like, this is not like everybody, everyone's just like, we got to do this. Okay, fine. Go.
Right.
You do it. We believe in you. And so, like, to some degree, I didn't vote in the primary because I felt like any Democrat was going to do this stuff. Like, this is just the stuff. This is stuff that just has to get done. And from an administrative standpoint, I'm really glad that Joe Biden knows a lot about the government and has been able to really quickly put people into place, like get things running the way it's supposed to. But would I say that that's a particular Joe Biden skill? Does he deserve credit for the fact that everything was so fucked that basically like anybody was going to come out a winner in the first 100 days because the grading scale was like, we are all dying. Significantly few of us are dying. That's we're not like, oh, things are good. We're literally like, we're not dying as much anymore.
Mm-hmm.
Victory, we've won.
Like, yeah, the headlines I've seen are very much like that, paired with how effective certain things have been, what a turnaround there has been, and how, and this relates to our first story today, how sort of quiet he has been and not really engaged in the fighting or any like media fodder. And it's just so funny the praise he's getting, because, but if you look at it, if you distill it, it's really just like, elderly white man stays on task for 3 months.
But here's the thing. It would have been true. And the thing that continually bothers me is that everything Joe Biden is doing, everything he proposes, all of the solutions, everything that he's done could all have been done 4 years ago. All of this could have been done 4 years. We could have been doing all of these things for you. We could have had a better pandemic response 4 years ago. All of this stuff could have been done 4 years ago. And we just chose not to do it.
We did have a better pandemic response.
But the lady parts. And so Hillary, who was like, hey, let's have a comprehensive childcare plan. She put that out in September in her Stronger Together book of 2016. Nobody read it because no one cared about policy. And now Joe Biden's going to be like, let's do a childcare credit. This is the most amazing thing that's ever been. I'm here being like, are you fucking shooting me? We had this 4 years ago.
Right.
So to some degree, I'm like, okay, well, the thing about him not taking the bait. We're going to talk about Kamala Harris in a second. There's a reason it's Kamala Harris and it's not Joe Biden. And it's because they can't, it's not that he doesn't have anything that they're attacking him on, it's that they can't figure out how to attack him because he's a white dude. And that's literally it. It literally comes down to, oh, he's a white dude.
I'm just mad he doesn't talk more.
They've just relied for so long on this, on the othering to do the work for them, that now when you have a guy like Joe Biden who literally looks and sounds like a TV grandpa, it's like it's kind of hard to do the othering of him. And, you know, I
because otherwise they other themselves. What are they going to do? They're going to other half their audience.
Yeah. And it's, I just think it is really interesting to see the response to Joe Biden as opposed to like Obama or what Hillary may have been able to accomplish if we had allowed that to go forward. But like, I wonder if Obama had been talking about or discussing all these like structural changes, getting rid of the filibuster, if like packing the court had been on the table, doing things via reconciliation more often, like, I think the fervor over that would be very different than the conversation. Obviously, like Republicans are still not into it under Joe Biden, but I could see the outrage dial going up to a gazillion if it was a black man saying, oh, I'm going to change the structure of the, or I support changing the structure of the Senate, or I support doing things differently. Like Obama, he didn't have like the wiggle room to do that kind of stuff.
People have already on Fox referred to some of Joe Biden's plans as reparations. So just imagine if it had been Obama behind them. Just imagine.
They attacked him for TARP, and that actually was a Bush era thing. Like it literally happened before he took office, and they would be like, this is going to be Obama's Katrina. And I was like, but Katrina is a real thing that happened under George W. Bush.
Yeah. Right.
Like, yeah. Like Obama's Katrina. I was like, Why are you just bringing up this horrible failure of government that happened under you?
Yeah. And also It's like, I think that we should dispel the notion that every president should have a Katrina or needs to. I think that we should get to where there's no Katrina and we move
beyond.
It's funny
that we're still saying Katrina. It's not funny, but Katrina was so bad that we are still saying Katrina, even though we're having a pandemic, but we're still being like, it's going to be Biden's Katrina. It's like not Biden's pandemic is the pandemic. Yeah. Katrina.
Biden's Maria never became a thing. Like how was like Maria not Trump's Katrina?
Exactly.
Well, we can continue going on this entire route, but like the whole point is that people started blaming him, and you actually saw this show up in Republican things where they would poll them and be like, what did Obama, like how do you think Obama responded to like like Hurricane Katrina? And they were like, this is really bad. And I was like, he wasn't in office. He wasn't even a senator.
No.
What is
famously it was George Bush who doesn't care about black people.
They're thinking of the other former presidential candidate Kanye West who did criticize George Bush.
Have you guys watched that clip in recent years? Because if you haven't, I really recommend watching it, but with your eyes only on Mike Myers' face as it's happening, because it is important to remember that Mike Myers is standing there.
Yeah. We'll put that up today, actually.
This episode is brought to you by ShipStation. If you run an e-commerce business, you know how much work it takes to produce something great while dealing with complicated shipping issues. That's why over 130,000 companies have turned to ShipStation, an innovative tool that allows you to focus less on shipping and more on building your brand. With ShipStation, you can manage orders, label printing, reporting, and customer service on one easy-to-use dashboard. You'll reduce warehouse costs with reliable enterprise solutions and save thousands on shipping costs with discounts up to 89% off. Plus, you can effortlessly import orders from everywhere you sell online. So, turn your shipping challenges into opportunities for growth. Go to ShipStation.com and use code POD to sign up for your free 60-day trial. That's ShipStation.com, code POD.
This story brings us perfectly sort of into our top story, which I sort of view as the media, especially on the right, needing to fill the space that has been left by Trump's just constant mania and has been sort of kept open by Biden not really taking the bait or engaging in some of these back and forths. He just lets Democrats in Congress do it for him. So on Monday, the New York Post, noted prestigious bastion of journalism and owned by Rupert Murdoch, it published a front page headline titled, "Come on in, but with K-A-M, which is that clearly means calm, because Kamala, we have a shirt available that says keep calm and carry on that you can purchase at betches.co/sup. It is come on in. Anyway, it claimed that copies of a children's book written by Vice President Kamala Harris were given to unaccompanied migrant children at a shelter in Long Beach, California. This facility is a convention center that's being used as one of those emergency intake shelter right now. We are, as you've probably heard, experiencing a lot of migration right now from unaccompanied minors that need to be taken care of, hopefully as safely as possible. This is one of those places that are ideally, you're not there for that long. But the story is claiming that the books were paid for at taxpayers' expense, implying that Kamala Harris was somehow enriching herself through the administration, and conservatives lost their mind, with even the party chairwoman, Ronna Romney McDaniel, tweeting, "Was Harris paid for these books? Is she profiting from Biden's border crisis?" Senator Tom Cotton took the bait, suggesting Biden has allowed a surge of migrants specifically to sell copies of Kamala Harris's picture book.
Yes.
That's a great business plan.
Yes, smart, Tom. Smart idea that you should share with others.
You know, come up with that if that's something you would do.
Yeah, I'm like, what are you talking about, man?
Yeah, and of course, Fox News, which is owned by the same family, reported this story as fact for several days. This story is, of course, completely false. Long Beach City officials told the Washington Post that Harris's book is not being handed out in welcome kits to the kids. Also, these kids aren't brought in with like really amazing, like, welcome to the United States. It's Disneyland. Like, this is like among the most dramatic moments of their life. It's not like, here you go. Single copy. So how did this start? A single copy of the book, it's called Superheroes Are Everywhere. She published it in early 2019, was donated in a citywide donation drive. Usually shelters can't even take donations. Remember when we were all like, why are kids in cages without diapers? Why can't we donate diapers? HHS just has a lot of rules, and statewide there are some rules, but this particular shelter was accepting donations of new books. This book was donated by a Good Samaritan. A photographer took a picture of that book, and that photo was distributed by Reuters news agency. So basically, like, if you're a publisher, you just buy Reuters, AP, Getty, and you can buy whatever pictures, you search what you want. And I guess a journalist or an editor came upon this picture and decided that it meant that thousands of children who are arriving at this facility, which actually only holds 100 people at a time, were gifted this book. Naturally, that's the best inference from a random photo. Multiple outlets picked this out. Of course, it was just a single photo spun out of context. Neither the city of Long Beach nor the Department of Health and Services paid for the book, but it blew out of control into a really damaging story. But this morning when we were texting about this, Caitlin, you called this a capsule of national politics right now. How so?
Republicans are batshit and they're giant reactionaries. That's what I meant. This is I wouldn't even say textbook. Like, it's just what they do. Like, there's no political platform that Republicans exist upon anymore. This is all that they do. They just gin up outrage around complete bullshit that they've fabricated from their fever swamp rejection space, where they're like constantly being like, well, we're really bad people, so that means our opponents must also be really bad people. Okay, everyone would do this, you guys. Everyone is like that guy who, like, you know, does something extremely wrong and then is like, you guys, everyone does this.
Yeah, who hasn't done this?
We're like, no.
Right, everybody allows surges of migrants at the border so that they can sell books, right?
Yes.
Nobody would do that.
Totally normal. Just like Trump manufactured a bunch of crises by not having government properly respond and then use the crisis that he'd manufactured to sell something. Like, let's say hydroxychloroquine. Did we remember how he cornered that and then insisted that it was a solution to the pandemic?
I can remember how he built a hotel in Washington, D.C., and then foreign leaders would stay at the hotel to meet with him as the president. Like,
this literally all day. We could literally go through like any moment of corruption. I bet if there was a way to make like migrant children take Art of the Deal, he would have done it.
Right?
Absolutely. He would have been like, it's a beautiful gift for the beautiful
if
children.
If Ivanka had a children's book, which is hilarious to think about in and of itself, but if Ivanka had a children's book, it would have been in those, this would have happened. this would be happening.
All you need is capitalism.
They would have built the wall out of it.
I mean, how do we know that Jared Kushner and Ivanka Trump didn't do this? We don't know.
Yeah, maybe they donated the book.
Literally, like, all of this is projection. It's all to say, accuse other people of doing things that, like, they are doing. They have no political platform. They hate brown people. They hate women. They hate everybody who's not a white dude, straight white dude. They are just so full of vitriol, and like, this is just what is going to happen forever now. And in fact, the problem that I have is that, like, none of our behavior changes. Like, we don't actually start treating them like there's a gift card scam, and I used to work in retail, and we actually like had a whole screen to like filter out people who were being scammed by gift cards, because that was so common. Also, everybody, this is super common. Please check on older people in your life,
yeah,
and make sure that they do not think the IRS is asking them to buy gift cards, because that's a real thing that real scammers do, and it's thousands of dollars, and it's really, really bad. Like, we have to scan for all of this, and like, our behavior changed. Like, we would just be like, you know, it would be like if you went through that scam and then came back to the store and were like, can I do it again? And I'd be like, no, we just saw you yesterday. Like, how is it possible that we got you out of this scam? And then you were like, oh, right, this person's definitely legit. I should go buy thousands of dollars of gift cards. We as a people have not changed our behavior at all. So we're just people walking in, buying more gift cards from Republicans. And they're like, they said that I have to pay my taxes via Apple Store gift card for some reason. How many can I buy?
Grandma, no.
Trump himself scammed people into donating like $5,000 a week that they never recovered because it completely tracks that they would be like, well, naturally. But that's the thing. They knew. So I want to sort of look at kind of the fallout from this, because I just can't believe. So the RNC and the Alice that ran the story, they're basically blaming the White House and Kamala Harris's office for not disputing the story sooner. While they have all they do is blame her for not working hard enough on the border and be on the border. But now they demand that she's out here like explaining that she's not making money. Also, she's already rich. She's rich. Doug Emhoff's rich. They're fine. They don't need the money. Not everybody is fake poor, is fake rich. Like,
Google
Donald Trump.
The price of Ella's Miu Miu coat from the inauguration.
Yes.
I assure you, Kamala is financially well.
Kamala is well. Joe Biden is doing fine. They are fine. So the New York Post removed the article, but not immediately. It took them just a while. Just the idea that you would ever assign a story based on a single picture. And they used the picture in multiple ways. So they would first, it was one picture of one book. They would zoom in on it, and then they would sort of make it bigger and show that it was on a bed to show, oh, here's another one, when it was really just the single book. And there was a reporter there who resigned from the paper. I mean, this is an inexcusable error, but I thought her explanation was really the only good one, which said, this was an incorrect story I was ordered to write, in which I failed to push back on hard enough. But she was a veteran reporter there. And last week, that same newspaper, they published an op-ed complaining that Glamour magazine hadn't written any glowing features of female Fox News journalists, because I guess they'd written a few of like CNN people and were furious that the Fox one hadn't. So just all complete faux outrage.
Yeah.
I don't know why the Glamour hasn't written anything about us.
I know. And Fox News journalists got Bombshell. They got a whole movie with Maggie. Charlize was in there. Nicole. We put all our best ladies in the movie about them. So I don't know what they're mad about.
Yeah. No one.
Exactly.
Margot.
It's exactly the kind of visual that Fox News wanted, which was all of
sexual assaults.
Literally, they won the hair and makeup Oscar.
Yeah,
for
we gave them our prettiest white women.
To tell their stories.
Yeah, exactly.
We made one pretty white woman look like a totally different pretty white woman.
Yes.
It's true.
So now we're going, actually, before we're going to check in on the state of the New York primaries. But before we do, I will read you both a glorious tweet I just read, which just says, breaking, federal investigators in Manhattan have just executed a search warrant at the Upper East Side apartment of corrupt Trump stooge. Can you guess? Rudy Giuliani.
Okay.
Something's fantastic. Going on up there. Something's going on up there.
Fantastic.
So we're going to talk about the New York primaries, which are coming up. These are coming up in June. And like a lot of sort of politically homogenous states or cities, New York City's June primary will basically determine who our elected officials will ultimately be. I don't know if I don't think there are any Republicans that look promising in any of these categories right now, but there are a ton of candidates for mayor, a ton. They have largely been campaigning via Zoom, but now we're starting to see more TV ads. These are the final months. I think a lot of New Yorkers are pretty engaged, but people generally don't start paying attention until around now. Again, I said it's in June. Is it on June 2nd or June 22nd?
June 22nd.
Thank you. It's on June 22nd. So far, the leaders in polling, I believe, are Andrew Yang and Scott Stringer, the latter of whom is or was the city's comptroller. He has a lot of city experience and has received some really high profile endorsements before. Today, there was an accusation of sexual harassment from a former intern. Hopefully we will get more facts and information and transparency about that. I mean, whenever you just have a bunch of white men at the top, something here is going to happen. Maya Wiley is also polling pretty high, I believe. She is the Emily's List choice. We had her on Afternoon Tea with Sammy. She would be the first Black woman to have the role. MSNBC columnist, civil rights person. I believe she worked in the Obama administration. Love her. And a lot of progressives are really rallying around former public school teacher and nonprofit CEO, Diane Morales.
Morales!
Yes.
I'm a big fan.
Morales power!
So why should we talk about New York a lot in this podcast? Because we live here, but we also have a lot of New York listeners. And I think there's a case to be made that there's a good reason to pay attention to New York City's elections. They do, as we talked to Eliza Orleans, the things that we choose to do, they impact people across the country on a symbolic level, but also, like, if we choose not to go after a Rudy Giuliani, look what can happen. How are we feeling about the sort of landscape of this mayor's race 2 months out?
Wow. For me, no offense to all the other American cities, but New York's the greatest. It just, you know, yes. That whole,
if you obviously
make it anywhere thing, that only counts for New York. It does not count for LA and San Francisco. Sorry. So moving on, I obviously think that cities in particular have been really neglected by national politics. That's been structurally done all the way back to the Permanent Apportionment Act of 1929, which is always going to be my number one foe.
We mentioned that yesterday.
We talked about it yesterday.
We were so mad you weren't with us.
About you. And we were like, Caitlin would know, but.
Wow, you guys.
I know.
Everyone knows that my greatest enemy is the Permanent Apportionment Act. So
we know. We've mentioned
that. I will cut that bitch. Anyway, moving on. it's because cities have been suppressed for a really long time in our national politics and really neglected. And it really does matter when you have a great mayor and the leadership that needs to happen, what is going to be modeled inside New York could be rolled out as models for other cities across the country, especially since urban populations have grown disproportionately and a majority of Americans now live in and around cities. It's a really big deal for New York in particular to kind of lead the way on having a really good urban experience and for that to be really important. New York was also one of the hardest hit in the coronavirus pandemic. We have a lot of the structural issues, whether that's small business funding, rent relief, because New York people, I didn't understand this until I started looking at the numbers more deeply because I've always lived here, but New York has the flipped numbers of home ownership. So other people are like, oh, renters, they're like a lower class. And I'm like, that doesn't make any sense to me. 2/3 of us rent. And then I was like, oh, in the rest of the country, only 1 in 3 people is renting. Okay, yeah. That makes a lot of sense now. Makes a lot of sense why people don't like renters. In New York, if you don't like renters, you don't like anyone. You just don't like people. and so you really do have to think about like who's going to invest in communities, and especially Black and Brown communities have been disproportionately harmed over the last, I mean, the last three mayoral administrations have been basically catastrophic for Black and Brown New Yorkers. Mm-hmm. Catastrophic is the right word. I mean, Rudy Giuliani, do I need to explain anything else? Rudy Giuliani, that's
the name. I would say catastrophic is this ending with him being thrown out of his Upper East Side apartment while they search it.
Yeah. I mean, that was the dream. That should have happened years ago. I'm just going to toss names out for people to go Google, but Bernard Carrick, you should, if you're not involved in New York,
Bernard,
you know who that guy is, that's a great person to go look up. It's K-E-R-I-K. Let me tell you, that's a journey. That's a journey. So yeah, New York has a lot of important stuff to do. And now we've got ranked choice voting. So it's going to be wild up in this place.
Yeah, it is. So New Yorkers will choose their official via ranked choice voting this year. So this is where voters can choose as many as five candidates for the same office, ranked from their top favorite to their fifth favorite, I guess. Later, a process basically transfers the votes from losing contenders who don't meet a threshold and don't have a chance to those who might just win. The idea here is that it means that you can still, or you should still, vote for your favorite candidate, even if you don't think that they will win, because it means your vote isn't quote unquote wasted. No vote is wasted. Important to note. But at the beginning, like we mentioned, like people that maybe wouldn't have normally been motivated to vote for Joe Biden because they think he's like the same. Well, if you have somebody else that you liked with ranked choice, you might be more motivated to go vote for them because there is a chance if they are like everybody's second or third choice that they could rise to the top. So that will hopefully motivate people to turn out here. Is this, what's the idea of this system? Because I think it's supposed to be sort of a gesture at electoral reform, but how should it make, how do you think it will motivate voters and impact this election?
This is all wild. I've never seen it before. This is madness. Who knows?
Is this why all these people ran too? Because they're just like, why not? If I'm everybody's fifth favorite, I could win.
Yes. It's a lot. And it's the only thing that gives me any hope against Andrew Yang, because like, at least if he can stay under the, if we can keep him under the 50% threshold, if we can keep him under that, then for first vote, then there's a chance that we could actually end up in like runoff voting where we could just stack him up against one other person who's not Andrew Yang, and that would solve the problem. This was what went wrong with like the Republican primaries in 2016. It was like there was no ranked choice voting. So
yes, good point. Yes.
And so like it was a huge field, and like whoever was the loudest and most psychotic apparently was the winner. And like that's Andrew Yang has got the most name recognition.
It's always name neck recognition. Yes.
And this is something I've heard on Twitter, so take it with a grain of salt. But I've heard that if there is a candidate that you do not want to become mayor, like let's just say it was Andrew Yang. We're not saying it's Andrew Yang, but if perhaps there was a candidate and that candidate was Andrew Yang that you did not want to become the mayor of New York, that you should just not rank him at all.
Right.
That sounds smart. And
if you only have four people that you want to be mayor, can you just rank four? Probably.
So we should look into that for
sure.
We'll
look into it and publish it all.
I've seen that you can, if there is someone who you would not like to be mayor, and again, I'm just using Andrew Yang and his weird Twitter account as an example.
Yes.
You should perhaps not rank that person.
Yeah, we will definitely be back before the primary with a big episode dedicated to this. We'll have Maya Wiley back. We'll try to get Ms. Morales.
The too. Other Ms. Morales.
The other Ms. Morales.
The other mayor.
And break down all of this and the issues. And hopefully by then there is more clarity with what's going on with Scott Stringer there. That is our show. Until the end of democracy, I'm Amanda Duberman.
I'm Elise Morales.
I'm Caitlin Berg.
And this is the Betches Sub Podcast.
The Betches Sup podcast is produced by Amanda Duberman, Jorge Morales Pico, and Sean Kilby. Editing by Jorge Morales Pico. Social media by Amanda Duberman. Be sure to follow at Betches_Sup on Instagram, Twitter, and TikTok. And send us your emails to suppod@betches.com.
Betches.